and we are the Nonprofits. I'm Dennis LeBay, and along with Jeff D. and Russell Glasser, we're going to talk about atheist issues from an undisclosed location in Austin, Texas, on the 1st of January, 2014. This show is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. If you want to learn more about the ACA, you can call their voicemail at 512-220-6561 or visit their website at www.atheist-community.org. The nonprofits broadcast live every first and third Wednesday of each month from 7 to 8:30 Central Time. You can join the nonprofits chat room by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. So sit back and enjoy the show.
That is one of the fastest intros.
That is one, yes, it is. Gotta talk fast.
Like one of them old-timey newsreel things.
Exactly right. Uh-huh. Yes.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Gentlemen.
Happy Dennis. New Year.
It is. It's 2014.
Yes.
It actually is.
The first day.
This is not one of those deals where we're recording it while it's still 2013, and then because it takes a few days to get it up online, you won't be hearing it until after the new year. No. It's so actually January 1 when we're recording this.
Yep. And the third most significant digit, fourth most significant digit of the Gregorian calendar has now incremented, and that's very important.
Wow!
What? What do you mean?
Cool.
I don't know about this. What is this?
I just meant it's a new year.
Oh.
That's it.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
The fourth most significant digit was 3, right. And now it's 4.
Oh. Well, I did know about that.
Woo.
Everybody have a good other people's holiday season?
Uh-huh. This year is different already because I've got health insurance.
As do I.
Hooray!
Yay. I went through the Affordable Care Act and went to their website. And
actually, I have
at healthcare.gov, and it worked like a charm.
Actually, you're a few days ahead of me because they haven't billed me yet, so presumably I'm not covered yet. But
I thought that the website was a complete broken mess that nobody could use, and
oddly,
that proves that nobody should get government health insurance.
My experience was that the government-run Affordable Care Act website, www.healthcare.gov, worked flawlessly. It was the privatized insurance company's website that was problematic.
That's what 2 months will do for you. And, you know, this has nothing to do with atheism, but a couple of months ago, I have this other blog that I do so that I can show that I know shit about programming.
Oh, yeah?
In case, you know, employers want to look at it from time to time. castlesofair.blogspot.com. And when everybody was losing their shit over over how badly the Affordable Care Act was running, and like even the Daily Show was you know grilling Kathleen Sebelius about you know like can you explain why this disaster happened, and I was like I can remember the SimCity rollout.
Yeah. We who are familiar with games understand this perfectly.
Every fucking big website that rolls out, you know, nobody ever is capable of doing enough planning. And that goes for enormous companies that roll out the most, like, the latest World of Warcraft expansion is always unplayable for a week.
Right.
And this has 300 million potential users.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of stuff that happens.
Hey, Dennis, you're sounding a little bit hollow over there. Actually, I am too, but could you maybe turn that...
It's okay,
that
I'm feeling a little bit hollow.
Can you turn that piece of foam, like, toward you? Maybe that would help a little bit. Just a little bit. I did encounter a problem on the healthcare.gov site, but it was a problem that had nothing to do with anything, just a weird administrative issue that was almost unique to me and my partner.
Mm.
And just totally not a surprise that was a hurdle. And it got solved.
Cool.
So, yay.
Yay.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on this.
No, I mean, it's not really relevant
just, like,
to the show.
We're just, like, beating up on people that we three, though not the ACA in general, we three have political positions that are kind of in agreement with each other, but not in agreement with some of the people out there. That
right.
Predicting doom and gloom for the healthcare website. I thought it was very reminiscent of the bungled rollout of the Y2K bug.
Yes. Yeah, why couldn't they get that straight? I was as an avid follower of this guy Gary North, who is a major Christian Reconstructionist and popular doom predictor.
Wow.
I was very upset that the entire world food system did not instantly collapse.
Right, it didn't bring down any governments or anything.
There was the 1999 Simpsons Halloween episode where Homer's carton of milk spontaneously sprung a dozen leaks at midnight.
That's good.
Well, let's start with a little bit of listener mail.
Okay.
And we'll start out with a guy taking me to school.
Ooh.
Ready?
In the short bus?
I am sorry to say that Jeff's analogy about the Brooklyn Bridge is precisely wrong. Fraud has not occurred in the scenario he outlined. Now, in my defense, I probably did use the word fraud inaccurately when it comes to the legal system. But in my defense, the definition of fraud is not really the issue of the point I was making. The point I was making is that even if you think that you own the Brooklyn Bridge and sell it to someone and it's not fraud, you still don't get to keep the money. That was my point. Going on with the letter, naturally the precise definitions vary by jurisdiction, but there are in fact legal distinctions between fraud and other types of misrepresentation. Generally speaking, a necessary condition for fraud is that the deception must be deliberate. This is not the case in the situation Jeff described, so it would be closer to negligent misrepresentation or possibly even innocent misrepresentation, depending on the exact circumstances. I'm thankful to John for sending us the correct terminology.
Yeah, that's cool.
Doesn't change the point I was making at all.
Right.
But it does support my point that the person is not entirely morally culpable for promoting something that they believe to be true, at least in the eyes of the law.
I totally don't care.
Okay, let's not do this again anyway.
Right. Okay, do you want to go on with the news or should I do a little bit more? A
little bit more mail. You got more mail?
Got tons okay. of mail today.
All right. Well, I got Pope news. Unfortunately, that means I'll be reading it
Except we're going to do this one letter about the Pope before we do that news.
Yeah.
So shall I do that?
Okay, do that.
Okay. Josh writes, normally I'm right on board with there's a problem with his first sentence, and we'll have to try to puzzle this out. Normally, I'm right on board with condemning you in the crimes against humanity the Catholic Church has committed against humanity.
What?
I can't even parse that.
I think what he means to say, since he listens to our show when he seems to be on our side, I think what he means to say is that he's with us in condemning the Catholic Church for its crimes against humanity.
And right.
Which would have been the way to say that.
Okay. By you, he right. meant the there's, one there's committing much, the crimes.
In my opinion, there's much deeper problems with this letter than that opening sentence, but now we're past it. But at some point, you have to be a pragmatist and give the new Pope credit for steering the Church toward the best that religion has to offer people, I see. I do give the Pope credit for steering the Church toward the best that religion has to offer people. I think that is exactly what he's doing, and I think the problem is that the media is missing the fact that of what is actually meant by the words the Pope has been saying, and they're interpreting it in this ridiculously positive light, when if you understand what religion is actually offering us, if you understand what Catholicism is actually about, if you read the frickin' words he's saying in context, instead of just listening to these sound bites that we're hearing in the media, you would know this Pope is not saying anything especially nice or clever or helpful. What do you really expect from the leader of the International Crime Syndicate that is the Catholic Church? What do I expect? You know what
I expect them to continue their criminal predation.
I expect one of predation. Two things.
No, Mr. Either Francis, I expect predation. You to die.
Thinking of people in the best light, I would expect this person to turn himself in. Right?
Right.
Hand evidence over to the authorities and take the whole freaking criminal syndicate down. That's right. At the nice end of the scale. At the bad end of the scale, I expect him to be a shill who is simply saying whatever needs to be said to try to repair his criminal organization's reputation in the eye of the public. And I am sad to say, Josh...
Shoot. Sorry. I thought the sound was off on that. That was embarrassing. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry to say, Josh, you have fallen for the spin being perpetrated by this spokesman for the International Criminal Syndicate. Moving on. Josh says, you can't just throw the frog in the pot of boiling water and expect it not to jump out.
Hey.
What?
The frog... Wait a minute. Was he even using that?
What analogy is he going for?
Okay, the analogy is actually something of an urban legend that people use all the time, which is that supposedly there was a study that says if you put a frog in a pot of water and then you very slowly heat it up,
right,
the frog will just sit there calmly and be boiled to death. Whereas when Mythbusters tried this thing... The frog just jumped right out because the water was too hot. But I don't know what this guy was trying to say about the frog, because he said you can't expect the frog to jump out.
I think you may have misstated the myth a little bit. It's that if you put a frog in a pot of water and you slowly heat the water, the frog cooks to death.
That's what I said.
And if you drop it in a pot of hot water, the frog jumps out.
It will jump right out.
That's not a myth, then. They prove that it's true, if that's what they found.
No.
I haven't seen this episode.
No, it is not true that the frog in slowly heating water...
He jumps out when it gets too hot.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
So I just want to make sure nobody propagates
that. I'm not going to hold Josh responsible for not having seen that episode of Mythbusters.
No, but I mean,
I haven't seen it either, and I
didn't
know.
It's thoroughly debunked by Snopes and all the sites that deal with that.
What he is trying to say here, the point of the reference to this story about frogs, is that
just wish people wouldn't use that at all.
I've heard this a lot from people trying to defend this Pope that he has to go slow,
right?
Yeah, you can't expect him to change it all overnight. Dude, I can expect whatever the frick I want from a human being, right? I can expect him if, as you say, he really has, good things in mind, I expect him to act on those things. I expect the man who sits in the seat of power in this big organization that presents itself as, the source of moral integrity... I expect him to show some frickin' moral integrity and say what he thinks.
And you would expect the followers, if they believe the words he utters are falling from God's mouth, would just agree with him.
And more importantly, I expect him to act on what you believe he thinks.
he can do what he wants, but we... do not need to see this constant media slobber over him and other atheists saying this is the greatest guy ever because he's just propagating the same stuff.
Josh goes on. The Pope has taken real steps in reforming the actual direction of the church by repopulating the Academy of Bishops so that it chooses more liberal leaders instead of the traditional hardline conservatives, which will have a real impact on the day-to-day functions of the church. I think what you are referencing, Josh, the only news I've heard that comes close to being like what you're talking about is there was a panel of some bishops on that dealt with certain questions. This was not like and I might be uninformed, I'm just saying, right? All I've heard is that he took some, like, a couple of the most hardline anti-gay rights guys off a panel, right? The outspoken guys who were known to be anti-gay. Now, he is on record, but this Pope, suggesting that his church should talk less about how bad it is to be gay.
Right.
And how bad, what a bad idea gay marriage is. He is on record saying that, and I think he means what he says. I think he means the church should stop talking about it. I see no evidence at all that he thinks the church is wrong or has been wrong on those issues. And as far as I'm concerned, getting a couple of the highest profile guys that have made it difficult for him to proceed with his program of cleaning up the reputation of his criminal organization. Getting a few of those high-profile guys off one little panel is exactly what you would expect and not indicative of any major change whatsoever.
Right. It's damage control. Nothing more.
Right. And, in fact, are you done with that?
Nope.
Nope.
Okay. No. I'm going to drag Josh through the mud. All the way through his letter.
Stomp, stomp, stomp.
Gorbachev didn't dismantle the USSR immediately. And he didn't mean to dismantle the USSR, by the way. What he meant to do was glasnost. It was openness. Turns out that openness brought the USSR to an end in conjunction with some other things that were going on. Right.
Wait, it wasn't Sate Reagan single-handedly zooming in there and
no.
and punching someone?
No.
Yeah.
Damn it.
And so your next sentence, he did it over time by slowly changing its direction. Bullshit. That was not Gorbachev's intention to dismantle the USSR. Obama didn't immediately fulfill his promises to the gay community immediately and took real heat for it at the same time. Yeah, and Obama is an elected president who has a Congress to deal with and a Supreme Court to deal with, right?
Right.
And concerns about election in future to deal with. He's not the pontiff of the Catholic Church, who, when he sits in his chair, is supposed to be infallible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? That infallibility thing is still in place, right?
As far as I know, that hasn't been revoked.
All this prick in the funny hat would have to do is sit in his chair and say the things you think he's thinking, Josh. And
I mean,
he doesn't.
There's a parallel that occurs to me between this and the excuses Christians give for the Bible not mentioning that there's anything wrong with slavery. Don't they often say, you know, well, you know, God was working within a culture where mm-hmm. they already accepted the practice of slavery, so he only had the opportunity to mitigate it a little bit.
Bull.
God!
You're right.
It's God.
Yeah, he's all powerful.
God doesn't have problems saying other things that should get you killed.
To be fair, yeah. to be fair to Josh, he's talking about the Pope and not
right, right.
and
well,
not
yeah,
an omnipotent
but
deity.
I mean but, with but, the whole infallibility thing.
But he's pretty impotent. Pretty nipotent, right? No, he's not omnipotent. But he's pretty damn freaking powerful. Once you get that hat on him, he could institute major changes right now.
Right.
Or he could say things that maybe wouldn't make changes right away, but which would be indicative of his intention of leading to those changes. Like saying the Catholic Church's position on gay rights has been wrong. He could just say that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you're right. Maybe he couldn't make it stick. He could still say it. And right. he doesn't. So I'm not buying it. And all this crap about, you know, oh, he's facing all these obstacles. I just love how, you know, he earlier Josh couched it as, you know, he's He's the. What do I really expect from the leader of the international crime syndicate that is the Catholic Church? What you're saying, Josh, is that Catholics are so bad that they are to be held to a lower standard. No, bullshit. Human beings are. It's perfectly reasonable to hold human beings to a decent standard. You don't get to make excuses because they're so bad. Right.
Right.
But therefore,
they can't be any.
Therefore,
better.
They're great because they did a little bit. Because they're so bad that a little bit is awesome. No, when this guy actually does anything that really is for the good of the nation and not just self-serving crap. Right. Self-serving right. crap and
the good
spin
of humanity.
Control.
Yeah.
Ugh. Sick. The best idealist can have the most impact by being a good pragmatist and making change happen in realistic stages. Again, even if I accept your argument that he isn't, that he doesn't have direct control over the Catholic Church, right? This guy could say stuff that is a lot more clearly indicative of what he of thinking the things that you think he thinks.
Right.
Instead of this very carefully parsed bullshit that has been coming out of his mouth. Now, you've got to listen to the, next time you hear that the Pope said something great, Josh, just do yourself a favor. Go find somewhere where there's a translation of the entire speech. Read the sections where he said these things the news media tells you are so awesome. Read them in context, right? And see if you don't find that, you know, when he says crap like, he said something
who
against...
Who am I to judge?
He said
atheist.
Something... let me use the example I'm prepared to use,
okay.
Russell. But that's right, too. When he says stuff like attacking, rampant capitalism.
Right.
Right. Read it in context. He was only against capitalism because it distracts people from giving all their time and money to their fucking church. If you read it, okay, he is not saying that out of the goodness of his heart and his concern for all of humanity. He's saying that out of his concern for his international criminal organization. When he kicked out the so-called Bishop of Bling, even if you accept that that guy really was living in particular luxury, and I've seen pictures of the building that he was in that was supposedly this mansion, and it just ain't no mansion. But even if you accept that, that's internal management. That's not... finding some guy who's taken some of your organization's money and living high on the hog with it and stopping him is not for the sake of humanity. If we caught Russell
right.
with his hand in the ACA till, right, and we stopped him and said, no, Russell, you can't do that
you
anymore.
Bastard.
That would not be for the sake of the world. That's you just and that gets spun when the so-called Bishop of Bling thing gets spun as that's so indicative that he's against he's against the people being wealthy, which is in itself not such a great thing to be against in the first place. I don't mind if people are wealthy. I just think they should be fair to one another. So anyway, I'm done. Do we have some news about the Pope so we can find out what that prick is actually up to?
Yeah. By an amazing coincidence, we happen to have some other news about the Pope to follow up that story.
Because coincidentally, I asked you to hold those news stories until after we had read Josh's letter.
Yeah.
There was no coercion between these two. No collusion.
Pope Francis reportedly was shocked by a bill that would allow gay couples to adopt children in Malta. Maltese Bishop Charles Scicluna told the Times of Malta that he spoke with Pope Francis about the bill, and the Pope encouraged him to speak out against it. The Holy See's reaction may come as a surprise to those who are not paying attention.
Surprise!
Yeah, those who heard his thing about how he thought that the Catholic Church... Actually, I don't think he was talking about the Catholic Church. I think he was talking about Catholics. in that speech when he said, oh, we should, you know, not focus so much on these issues. I think he was talking to Catholics and not to the church. Because check it out. Because this happens, and right away he's encouraging bishops to talk about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, the Holy See's reaction may come as a surprise to those who have viewed him as progressive on gay rights. LGBT magazine The Advocate even named him their person of the year.
Yeah.
But they had Get over it, guys.
Completely forgetting the point in his pre-papal career where he was on record saying that gay marriage was a plot from Satan. That is a direct quote.
Yeah.
In translated to English.
Yeah, despite his July comments where he said, "Who am I to judge a gay person of goodwill who seeks the Lord?" The Pope has a long history of being against gay rights. He has come out strongly opposed to same-sex marriage and called it a destructive attack on God's plan.
Doesn't sound like a judgment at all.
Well, I guess he's less in a capacity to judge now that he's Pope, which is
no,
not
no.
That's the way
that, this is this crap we have seen a million times before from Christians of all stripes, which is, oh, I'm not judging you; it's God that says.
Right.
So I can go ahead and echo this hateful crap because it's not me talking. See, I don't have to take any personal responsibility for the words coming out of my mouth,
And because no one's going to ask me, do I agree with God?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And anyway, that bullshit about who am I to judge was all about, you know, saying, oh, yeah, and then the whole atheism thing, one of the early things that got in the news, that atheists can go to heaven, was like, part of that speech. And what he meant was atheists can go to heaven as long as they become Catholics. Good grief.
Yay!
This guy pisses me off.
Yeah, I mean, and that has always been what people said. That's what freaking Jack Chick tracts are about.
Right.
They're about, you know, this guy's an atheist, and then this dude with the mustache comes along, and he's like, you know, get on your knees and praise Jesus and tell him you accept him into your heart. And then they show him going to heaven later.
Yeah.
Duh.
But everybody can go to heaven.
We know you think that.
That news story had legs, and everybody was talking about it because everybody thought they knew what the Pope meant. They were wrong.
They were projecting things that they wanted to hear, and the Pope was making it easy for them.
Mm-hmm. Is that his job?
Yeah.
Then don't get me started on touching a guy with boils as a photo op. Don't get me started.
Washing people's feet. There's a rumor that...
I mean, this is already the organization that adores Mother Teresa. It's not like this stuff is anything new for the religion. Maybe it just seems like putting forth the appearance of caring about the poor now appears radical because we've moved so much away from that in the last
and it's especially painful when you hear when you hear this kind of conciliatory crap coming from our fellow atheists. You know, guys, letting the Catholic Church get away with this program of spin and public relations and damage control, letting them get away with that and saying crap like, oh, well, you know, give him a chance. He's saying some nice-sounding things as long as you listen to them out of context. But I'm sure he really, really wants to do those things, and he's really, really, really going to eventually actually make a change. If you buy that crap, that is toxic to the hope of any actual change ever happening. It is only by continuing to keep the pressure on that there will ever be change in any of these world-spanning criminal religious organizations. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying.
So, and that means you, Bill Maher, shut up about that stuff. Like, I think the Pope might be an atheist.
Good grief.
No.
And, you know, even if it's true. Even if it's true, even if everybody who thinks the Pope means well by all this stuff is right, the moment that the pressure worldwide is off the Catholic Church to reform because they've heard the and been satisfied with these happy little sound bites taken out of context, that'll be the end of the reform. That's right. How it works. Keep the pressure on. Okay, fine. Show us the money, you know?
Or follow the money.
And even the Pope, you know, when given the information that some priests had been diddling, raping some small children, right? Even the Pope could pick up a phone and call the cops, hand over the information.
Right. Doesn't do it.
This bullshit about how, oh, he can't do anything. Bullshit. Somebody in the organization handed him some documents and said, Mr. Pope, sir, this shows that these guys are raping kids. And what does he do? Instead of handing the information that they have over to the authorities, he just fires them. And nitwits around the world get excited by, Yay. Oh, that's such an improvement. They don't have a job anymore. What is that? How does that help the children that were raped or the children that are gonna be raped? How does that help? That is exactly what you do if all you care about is the PR of your big world-spanning criminal organization. If you care about actual human beings and actually doing some good, you alert the authorities with the information that you have. Okay.
Yep.
Let's move on.
No.
Do you got more news about this?
Do you want me to make you feel better? Because this next story will not.
No, that's all right. No. Stay on topic, but let me stop ranting about it.
Oh, on topic meaning you want more Pope?
If you got more Pope?
I got more Pope, but I don't feel like it's that worth reading.
Okay, fine.
The Pope also put out a New Year's message where he was like, you know, we are all children of one Heavenly Father. We belong to the same human family, and we share a common destiny. So, you know, be nice to each other.
I need to hear the context. I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
I am just not. The media has been so irresponsible in actually, you know, looking at what this guy
has to say.
Taking
a sentence at a time from this.
I'm not buying it. Every time I've looked deeper, I have found context which shows, nope, this is just standard boilerplate, hardline, regressive Catholic ideology.
Yeah. But there's stuff going on in Uganda, which you may remember for such popular laws as kill the gays.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They're not that crazy about straight people either.
What?
Where did this go? Okay, so MPs in Uganda pass a bill against miniskirts.
Oh, good grief.
Parliament yesterday passed the Anti-Pornography Bill, a new piece of legislation that seeks, among others, to ban wearing of miniskirts and further clarify the offense of pornography in Uganda's laws. This is at monitor.co.ug. The government wrote on its view that pornography has become such an insidious social problem in the country to get the bill through Parliament. While some lawmakers claimed that the bill violates people's rights, the majority agreed with the government and enacted the bill. With the enactment of the bill, my dream has been fulfilled, said FR, I don't know what FR is for, Simon Lokodo, the ethics minister. Oh, just that title is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess it wouldn't have to be if it was actually about ethics, but this is Ugandan ethics.
This would be his dream of not seeing women in miniskirts.
Yes.
Has come true.
I would like to note that the article in the Monitor helpfully provides a close-up of legs in miniskirts.
Cool.
To show
in
what
case you didn't know what the... In case you lived in Uganda and were not allowed to ever see that
so that's
again,
like the headliner, and then there's a tiny caption under it that says, the new legislation outlaws wearing such outfits.
Oh, good grief. That's it?
So, yeah, I mean,
Story overtly... I mean, it's obvious that this is religion at work,
obviously.
Which is crazy, because I'm betting the word miniskirt does not appear in the Bible anywhere.
Yeah, but it's...
And how do they define miniskirts? Does it say miniskirts, or does it actually give a length?
The Bible does say, like, women can't even wear makeup, doesn't it?
Does it?
I think.
It says all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah.
But in the story, does it say whether they actually have a number? Because suppose you have a very, very tall woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Depending on the way the thing is phrased, she could be wearing a regular, you know, a regulation length dress,
right,
and have it still be as revealing
looks
as
like
a mini skirt, but due to her freakishly tall height.
You're going
to
go for the whole rules lawyering. Wait a minute, if you can't feed a mogwai after midnight, what time zone is it? Kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because that's what you find. That's the funnest thing about crazy fundamentalist religion-inspired laws is they tend to be written by really stupid people who don't think through the implications.
And you got to take it seriously because the consequences could be being burned alive.
Right.
I have helpfully found a Bible site that talks about wearing makeup.
Uh-huh.
1 Timothy 2:9 through 10 says, "Likewise also that women should adorn themselves in respectable apparel, with modesty and self-control, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly attire, but with what is proper for women who profess godliness, with good works."
So that specifically does not reference skirt length.
No.
But does reference braided hair.
You know,
think in Uganda they have a law against braided hair or against wearing jewelry of any kind? No.
How can
so they're not even actually reading the day. Not that I would like it any better if they did.
Yeah,
right?
Well.
But they're not even reading the actual stupidity.
Well,
it's
just
there.
Like Christians don't read their Bible.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, here's another one.
More Christians not reading their Bible.
No clue what's in it.
And you, O desolate one, Jeremiah 4:30, what do you mean that you dress in scarlet, that you adorn yourself with ornaments of gold, that you enlarge your eyes with paint? In vain you beautify yourself. Your lovers despise you. They seek your life.
So
Jeremiah's an MRA, basically.
So there, it references dress color,
mm-hmm,
right? Can't wear red.
Right.
Does it specifically say scarlet?
Yeah, it says scarlet.
What about a magenta? Would that be okay?
I don't think they had invented magenta yet.
Red ochre. Huh? Huh?
Yeah.
There are a number of different colors that could be reddish scarlet. What does it say? It says scarlet?
It says scarlet.
It says scarlet.
Right.
Come on, help me out here, Dennis.
Don't do apparently, it because it's heavy metals, you know. Yeah. It's like cadmium red light.
Cadmium red. There you go. Is it okay to dress in cadmium red?
If you like heavy metals.
I don't know. I'm betting there's cadmium red dresses that are not poisonous.
Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is this your weekly segment on crazy shit in the Bible?
No, actually.
Did you bring one of those?
So my weekly segment was not crazy shit in the Bible. Oh. It was, I'm going with shit apologists on the internet say.
And have you gotten a segment like that for
pretty
us
cool
today?
I have, in fact.
All right, well, let's finish this one.
Okay.
All right, so they passed this stupid law.
Uganda, yes.
Uh-huh. And
that's it.
It
also prohibits any combination of the proceeding that depicts unclothed or underclothed parts of the human body, such as breasts, thighs, buttocks, and genitalia.
Does underclothed mean body parts in their underclothes?
No,
it's not clothed enough.
And the definition of enough is?
They don't have it included.
Yeah, they
in the
don't.
Law.
They,
you know,
they
they're
going
to have to get
that
themselves some morality police to to go up and down the streets and make sure that
what could possibly go wrong.
They'll apply the rule of thumb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's Uganda.
Uh huh. And now they pass a law, and now Uganda is a paradise.
Yes. Yes.
They fixed
because
Uganda.
It's a religious government, so yeah, it should be a paradise.
Good grief.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay, so.
So, as atheists, we think this is just completely fucking stupid.
Well, yeah. Obviously.
I think women and men should be able to wear whatever they want. And I'm going to go with the extreme view of even being naked.
Sure, why not?
Isn't toplessness in fact legal in Texas?
Austin?
Just in Austin?
I don't know. Yeah.
It's
about
not
Texas.
Like many avail themselves of the opportunity.
But... at the Gay Pride Festival and Eeyore's birthday, they often do. Hippie Hollow.
And
is
now
that still a thing?
Austin is a paradise.
Yes. Well, more of a paradise.
Would you rather live in Austin than Uganda? I mean, they have morals over there.
I'll go further and say I think pornography is perfectly okay as long as the people choosing to do it are choosing to do it of their own free will. And force or crime involved in forcing people into doing it, which is what you get when you criminalize it, you morons.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. So now it's time for my new weekly segment.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
Shit. What politics on the internet say.
Last time, I can't even remember the gibberish we went through last time. It was some Catholic thing, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
This week, the internet has been all abuzz about this steaming pile of crap that Pastor Rick Henderson has written as an editorial for the Huffington Post.
Steaming.
I know we disagreed with this before the show, but I am continually annoyed by the Huffington Post playing host to a bunch of idiocy like Deepak Chopra and this nonsense. I think
there's no disagreement about that.
Okay.
It's just, you know, are they doing it because there is a fundamental agreement on the part of the Huffington Post editors with those idiots, or are they providing a wide platform, and unfortunately you therefore get some extreme goofiness?
They're doing it because their business model is mindless clickbait.
And then
that's what I think.
And then it's our responsibility as the general public to react to this stuff.
Sure.
Right? And see to it that posting this kind of nonsense doesn't lead to their success.
Result in clicks somehow.
Well,
I'm right.
it's going to result in more clicks now because we are referencing it.
Okay.
You can't win.
Well,
yeah, you can.
But it has gotten several good responses around the internet, but today it's getting one from us.
All right, go ahead.
Pastor Rick Henderson writes a post titled, "Why There Is No Such Thing as a Good Atheist."
I noticed that.
Yeah.
I've always wondered why that was.
Yep.
How come we're all bad atheists?
You clicked on this post for one of two reasons. Either you're hoping that I'm right, or you know that I'm wrong. So right out the gate, that is not true. He's just puffing up his writing prowess.
Sure.
Clickbait.
For those of you who are eager to pierce me with your wit and crush my pre-modern mind, allow me to issue a challenge. I contend that any response you make will only prove my case.
Allow me to poison the well.
Done.
Like encountering a hustler on the streets of Vegas, the deck is stacked and the odds are not in your favor.
He's just admitted he's a hustler.
Yeah.
And not playing fair. Okay.
This is actually the point where I generally just hang up on callers and say, fuck you. Because he's right. He's announcing right up front, you know, I don't care what you say and I'm not here to listen to.
You mean on that other show?
On that other
show where there's actually like moving pictures of people that are talking to you?
Yeah, that one.
That would be The Atheist Experience. One of two other fine shows. Produced by the
Atheist Community.
If you want to learn more about the ACA, you can...
So then he gets all condescending explaining what the word worldview means. I think we can skip that. While it is true that there is no definitive atheistic worldview, all atheists share the same fundamental beliefs as core to their personal worldviews. While some want to state that atheism is simply a disbelief in the existence of God, there really is more to it.
So there's more than one thing listed here?
Yeah.
I don't even need to know what they are. He's full of shit if there's more than one thing that is the core of atheistic belief.
Yeah, well, this guy says if you're an atheist, you have to believe these other things.
All right. Well, let's score them.
The universe is purely material. Two. The universe is scientific. And three,
I don't even know what that means. The universe is scientific?
I'm not reading details, observable, knowable, and governed strictly by laws of physics.
It's not all observable.
No.
I would say it's observable in principle.
Yeah,
in principle.
You know, given enough.
Really, we're cutting this guy slack on this question.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I agree with these 3 points myself.
And by the way, yes, but they're not things we believe because we're atheists.
Right.
They may well be things we are free to believe because we're atheists.
Right.
Because if you're not an atheist, then you've been told some other set of things you are required to believe. Okay, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
So, one, the universe is purely material. Yeah. Two, the universe is scientific.
Bing.
Three, the universe is impersonal. It does not have a consciousness or will, nor is it guided by a consciousness or will.
The universe. Yeah, there's no evidence of that.
Yeah, I agree with that, and yet...
Nothing to do with atheism.
No, the thing is, you can come up with situations where none of those hold.
There are atheists who believe in reincarnation or ghosts.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, no, yeah. There's nothing to do with atheism.
Right.
Okay.
And the universe is material. Well, no, you can have atheists who believe there's other stuff. Sure.
Right.
Good. So this guy says, shows right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Denial of any of those three affirmations will strike a mortal blow to atheism.
No, it won't.
Mm-mm.
Right.
The universe could be conscious, and it could be some kind of ridiculous light speed limited, distributed neural network thing going on across the entire universe that would not be a god. Okay, so that's wrong. What is the... There could be material and blurg, right?
As I mentioned on that other show, perhaps the thing that was required to kickstart the universe was one metaphysical ham sandwich outside of time.
Right.
Not a conscious thing, not anything that you'd favor with the appellation of God. It just, for some reason, kicked off all the matter in the universe. That is not saying that everything is material and scientific.
Isn't there, in fact, stuff that is beyond our ability to observe, even in principle, because of the expansion of the universe?
Yes.
There is, and it's only going to get worse.
Right.
So I don't. So that is also. In fact, I'm going to say of the three things, I'm going to take a hard line on the observable thing and say no. I'm an atheist. I don't think that even in principle the universe is entirely observable, and I don't
not
much
even
care.
If we say from some arbitrary vantage point in the universe.
I don't think we're allowed to say that, because from whatever vantage point you're at, the universe is still expanding, and there's still stuff that's going to be not observable by you from that spot. There is no one spot from which you can observe it all.
Right, and we cannot see what's going on inside a black hole.
And
it's impossible.
I have a personal I'd like to see a science fiction story written, that's written to take place many billions of years in the future, where the universe has expanded to the point where you can't even see other galaxies anymore because
all you see is the Milky Way.
Right. And the way that religions are taking advantage of this to cling to their power. And I do not appreciate this prick trying to jump on that bandwagon already when it's not that big of a problem, right?
Yeah.
and try to get that plate spinning. Fuck you.
Right.
Pardon my French.
This next sentence, I think, is going to require some dissection. He says, anything and everything that happens in such a universe is meaningless.
This is a thing we have to believe.
Oh, boy.
This is a thing we have to... No. Bullshit. No.
Meaningless to
that doesn't,
whom?
That doesn't... Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that he doesn't specify to whom.
Right.
Well, the God argument would basically be that unless there is some ultimate to whom all things have meaning.
Does he specify that what he means by meaningless is it doesn't have meaning to a God?
No, he doesn't.
Then he says, just wrong. I'm saying he's just wrong on that.
These are all actions that can be now, known and explained but never given any meaning or value.
We can give the meaning and value as much as we please.
Watch me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That is now, he is now 50-50 out of four questions for me.
If he had just used the word intrinsic.
This isn't one of the things?
This is not a fourth point. It ended. He's now, like, drawing conclusions from these three points.
It is different from the other points, though. Yeah. And he's still asserting that atheists believe this.
Yeah.
So he's still wrong.
But he's asserting that it's not, axiomatic in the way that he thinks the first three are. He's thinking
that's
that once you believe the universe is impersonal and
you must also believe
that nothing has meaning.
Since he was wrong on at least one of the first three, it's no surprise to me that he's now completely off
the
rails.
He's wrong on all three.
Right.
Yeah.
For those of you who think you're about to light up this supposed straw man and raise me to the ground, consider the following. Then he quote mines three atheists. okay, uh-huh. So William Provine, modern science directly implies that there
Never
is no ultimate meeting
Who's
for
William
humans.
Who's William Provine?
Don't know.
Okay.
Richard Dawkins.
Dawkins?
The universe we observe has precisely the properties that we should expect if there is, at bottom, no design, no purpose, no evil, and no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music.
And the only reason that quote seems to support this guy is because he thinks, without having said so, he thinks mm-hmm. meaning has to be at the bottom. And yep. we all think there's meaning, it's just not at the bottom.
We crowdsource meaning.
It's up here where we are.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's thinking beings that
and
attribute
Richard
meaning.
And Richard Dawkins would agree. I mean,
yep.
you know,
yeah.
at least one of his books, and probably several, I'm thinking Unweaving the Rainbow in particular,
yeah.
is all about how interesting and meaningful it is to
yeah.
experience the world through an understanding of science.
And who's the third?
Edward O. Wilson.
Okay.
I know this guy.
I
actually listened to an entire lecture series on evolution by him.
Uh-huh.
And he says, no species, ours included, possesses a purpose beyond the imperatives created by its genetic history.
Right. That doesn't mean that purpose is a thing that the concept has no meaning. Again,
right.
purpose is
species
is attributed to stuff by us,
right.
not inherent in that stuff.
Individuals assign meaning.
Right.
What a prick. Okay. Can we bring this to a close at some point?
Yeah, we can. I just want to get around to the part that demands to be
okay.
looked at through the lens of the Euthyphro dilemma, which
Ooh,
you so popularly promote. morality in this view can only mean that those actions that are helpful to make more fit human. Morality can only mean those actions that are helpful to make more fit humans. It does nothing to help us grapple with the truth that it's always wrong to torture diseased children or rape women.
Oh, bullshit! Just because evolution is true. Well, I wrote a blog post before there were blogs.
Okay.
Just on my website I used to have. It's on my blog now, www.jdee.com.
Mm-hmm.
What Worries Jeff D.
Mm-hmm.
At blogspot.com. The evolution is not God either. just because evolution is the explanation for, you know, human for why things are living things are here and have the characteristics they have, does not mean that therefore that's where we hang our sense of meaning or purpose, right? It doesn't mean our lives are about a struggle for survival and survival of the fittest and crap like that. It doesn't mean any of that, and here's this prick making exactly that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Evolution is just context. It doesn't tell us how to live.
Right.
We should not emulate evolution. Absolutely.
Which, by the way, one of the guys you quote mind makes very clear every time that he talks. Richard Dawkins has a very clear, lucid things to say about this, which were not quote mind because they were inconvenient for this dickweed.
Yeah. Right.
Evolution is not our friend.
Those quotes that I read are rife with ...
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Of course. I was just going to say, in bringing up the Euthyphro dilemma,
yes,
that, as far as determining that it's always wrong to torture diseased children or rape women, bringing a god into there doesn't really buy you anything.
Nope.
Since the god could himself order the... the perpetration of horrific acts. I mean, you notice he said, you know, it's always wrong to torture diseased children specifically so that he could narrow it down as much as possible. But he conveniently leaves out what happens if those diseased children die without having received Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior.
Is it wrong to drop fire and brimstone on children?
Good question.
Apparently that's great because God does it.
And it's okay to just, kill children, male children, who are, inconvenient for you when you come in and conquer their city. That's perfectly okay.
And rape the women.
Whether those children are diseased or not.
Keep them for yourselves.
Yes. So, he sets up the straw man that unless you have a god, there can't be any meaning and no moral decision you may make as a society can have any weight.
Yeah.
And he also says God solves this problem, which, in fact, if you bother to look into the Bible, it does not do.
Should we do a quick recap of Euthyphro for our listeners?
Yeah. Please do, yes. Everyone should know this.
I'm going to make some mistakes in doing this, and you guys will correct me.
Okay.
The Euthyphro, story of Euthyphro is a tale told by Plato about Socrates, where one of these illustrative stories to make a philosophical point, where Socrates encounters young Euthyphro who is on his way to court to testify against his father. His father, what did he do, beat a slave or something? It was something that was considered inappropriate in their culture. And the young man is all puffed up with pride that he is going to do this because rather than just standing by his father and lying on his behalf, Euthyphro is being not holy. What is the term?
Noble.
Pious.
He's being pious because he's doing what the gods want. And it's always troubled me a little bit that Socrates comes out seeming to be on the side of siding with your dad, even if he did a crime. But let that slide for now. Yeah. But Socrates asks Euthyphro this simple question.
Would you like to actually dramatize this from the original dialogue on Gutenberg?
No, I think it would take too long.
Well, I just meant a few lines of it.
Can you find precisely the lines?
I did.
Okay, you be Socrates, I'll be Euthyphro.
Okay, I think we should start here, but I'm not sure.
I have to start? I'm not even over there by your microphone yet.
Yeah, but I think...
All right, where am I starting?
Right here, Euthyphro.
And do you imagine, Socrates, that any benefit accrues to the gods from our gifts?
But if not, Euthyphro, what is the meaning of gifts which are conferred by us upon the gods?
What else but tributes of honor, and, as I was just now saying, what pleases them?
Piety, then, is pleasing to the gods, but not beneficial or dear to them?
I would say that nothing could be dearer.
Then once more the assertion is repeated that piety is dear to the gods?
Certainly.
And when you say this, can you wonder at your words not standing firm but walking away? Will you accuse me of being the Daedalus who makes them walk away, not perceiving that there is another and far greater artist than Daedalus?
Okay.
This is, yeah.
All right. This has completely fallen apart on us. I don't think we can...
The important thing here is that Socrates asks...
which I was about to say.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All right.
That was a good attempt.
I didn't know I had more preparation.
The
stuff about Daedalus, not really... central.
No,
he's used as an example in part
Plato
of an ongoing conversation.
Ramble a little bit.
So the point is, Socrates asks Euthyphro whether piety is good because it pleases the gods, or whether the gods promote piety because pious behavior is good in and of itself. That's the dilemma.
Right.
If you say...
Or do the gods love pious acts because they're already pious, basically?
That was right.
The first bit was, is piety good because it's loved by the gods, or the other way around?
Right. Is the definition of piety that which the gods love, or is the definition of piety that which is good, and the gods just love it because it's good?
Right.
If you answer the first way, and this is now used as an argument against Christianity.
Right.
Never mind those ancient Greeks with their pantheism. Yeah. It's now used as an argument against Christianity because if a Christian answers, why, yes, piety, doing what God says, is good just because God said so.
Right.
Because it's what God wants. If you say that, then you get into the problem where, well, tomorrow God could want something else, and that would, in that something else could be something which you don't think is actually very good. Or if you say that doing what God wants is good because God just wants this stuff that actually is good in an objective sense, then you've dethroned God as a lawgiver and you're just living in a world where you try to find out the good things to do and do them.
Right. Then God is not the guy who makes stuff good. He's just the guy telling you, oh,
right.
I used my knowledge of the universe to and I'm letting you know that it turns out this is good.
Right. Now, the standard Christian apologetics answer to this is to try to move the goalposts by saying, oh, no. See, God, the goodness is from God's nature. It's inherent to God. They're really addressing the first prong of the dilemma mm-hmm. because they're trying to say that it can't change, which is A, bullshit, because if you read the damn Bible, you see that the rules that the God has do in fact change over the course of the Bible. So that's bullcrap. And B, there is an open question then. Where did the God get his nature? Right?
Right.
If he created it himself, then he decided what his nature is going to be. And once again, it's just arbitrary. He made it up.
Right.
If, on the other hand, he didn't create his own nature, if his own nature came from some mysterious circumstances that led to the God being the way that he is, then it's he've dethroned him again as a lawgiver because he's just doing what
his nature is, reporting to you what his nature
is, and there's nothing inherently good about it.
Right.
So...
Right, and in that case, there was no conscious decision made at any point. So again, it is just, I mean, it's got nothing to do with God's personal choice.
Right. So.
All right, so.
Euthyphro's awesome.
I love it very much.
One of the most powerful ways of just shutting down the worst, depredations by
religion when it tries to tell you how you're supposed to live.
Yeah. Now, right. I would warn that in using this to argue with theists, it's usually not worth your time to actually go back and explain classic Greek philosophy the beginning. But it is something for you to keep in mind.
Nor is it necessary.
Yeah, it's not. Because you can, you know, you can sum all this up by saying, what do you think about the verse where God actually asked Abraham to kill a child? Or, you know, something similar where you can point out that God could decide that something that we view as horrible is actually good.
Good, right.
You know, and if you can get to a point where the person personally disagrees with the morality of the Bible, then you don't have to go into all that stuff.
Yeah. Yay.
Okay.
I'm going to do another listener mail.
Do so.
All right.
All right, Sylvia Brown again.
Oh.
And more importantly, male privilege and gender slurs.
Boo.
Okay. Somebody, I didn't record the name of the person that sent this in, sent us two definitions. They found a dictionary somewhere. They sent us two definitions of the word hideous.
Uh-oh.
And one of them is about actual physical appearance, and the other one is offensive to moral sensibilities, despicable. And then goes on to say, honest guys, when I hear that non-gender-specific waste of oxygen described as hideous, I think of definition two, not definition one. Well, that's fine, dude, but the whole world does not agree with you that definition two is the more common one.
Right.
In fact, the reason why dictionaries make a definition two is because it's less common. And anyway, I'll go further because what you should have said is, hey, hideous does nothing about gender.
Right. It's not.
But it's not all about that, okay? There is no point in bringing up the gender of the person who you're disagreeing with because their gender is irrelevant. And there's no point to bringing up
the appearance
of the person that you're disagreeing with, male or female or any other variation.
Right.
Because that's not relevant.
If I may.
Yeah.
In general, when people are critical of women and not men, and this is, this is a thing that happens a lot on the internet,
yeah,
and even in sort of mainstream journalism stuff, and we ourselves are apparently not immune to it because
nope.
We did this, which is why we're having this whole discussion.
Uh-huh.
If it is a woman, it is much more likely that her appearance is going to be commented on.
Yeah.
That, you know, Hillary Clinton is going to be criticized and dismissed because, you know, she either wears revealing blouses or she is too unfeminine. You know, a woman who happens to have a little bit of weight is much more likely to have that focused on than a man, particular examples like Chris Christie notwithstanding.
That's all true. I would consider that all commentary on the problem, though, because even if it wasn't common, that wouldn't make it any more apt.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the point underlying all of this is, can we please just stick to the subject? If we're in disagreement with a viewpoint, can't we just talk about the viewpoint?
Well, not if you want to actually mock and insult the person themselves.
Okay. But then if you're going to mock and insult someone for being, like, you know, an ignoramus.
Sylvia Brown's
talk about what's relevant
is not.
Right. Talk about what's relevant on the insult scale. Again, Sylvia Brown was not a lying, manipulative, evil person because of her gender or because of her appearance. Her appearance and gender could have been anything, and she could have done exactly the same actions. And the actions are the issue.
Yep.
Even when you get to the insults.
And we have another letter on this same subject. And this person demanded that I do it in a Canadian accent, and so I won't.
That'll show him.
Regarding the recentish talk about insulting Sylvia Brown with gender-specific insults, does this mean I can't call people cunts anymore? Now, I know that's more common in some other countries than it is in the United States, but can't? Would you please not put it that way? It's not like we're sitting here making up rules about what words people can and cannot say.
Right. Rules of course, that will be enforced.
You can use whatever words you want. We're just suggesting you might want to stop and think about it and not go there. Okay?
Yeah.
Because reasons. And we're giving you the reasons. I love that phrase, by the way.
People, because reasons.
That's become really common now that people will say, you know, blah, 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 because reasons. And I love that because even though they're not giving the reasons, and of course one might be interested in what those reasons are,
right.
At least that little catchphrase now gives a nod of the head to the importance of actual reasons for things.
Actually, yes. I don't know what your experience has been, but I usually encounter because reasons from people who are making fun of someone else's arguments and saying they haven't really got any reasons.
That may well be, but they're still keeping the idea that reasons are important in play by using that phrase.
Yeah.
Right? By using it to criticize a person for not having any. They're keeping the idea of the importance of reasons in play.
Right, but I wouldn't use because reasons to bolster my own thing
okay.
I'm saying.
I'd be happy to go on and list the reasons for anyone who's interested in it.
Please do.
It saves time while not pretending that it's not important.
Right.
Before then, it was because I say so, because I think so, because God says so, because, you know, I was told so in Sunday school, which are not reasons. Because I've long found that rather satisfying. Well, of course you do.
Yeah.
Right?
Some people find it satisfying to call black people racist slurs.
Right.
That doesn't mean that you won't be called out for being a racist or a sexist when you do it.
It satisfying you doesn't make it any more apt. Right? Also, when Sylvia Brown croaked like an amphibian asshole and I posted about it on social media, I called her a dick. What are your thoughts on using gender-specific insults aimed at the other gender? Well, those are especially not apt since she hasn't got one. This whole letter puzzles me. Does it get balanced out? No, it's not about that dude. It's about dame. I can't actually tell from this gender non-specific name that this person has. Does it get balanced out? No, that's not what it's about. It's not like it's okay as long as offenses are committed on both sides equally. It's not about keeping score of, you know, gender purity. It's about talking about things that are relevant.
Is it okay to describe things as dickish behavior?
I would say no. Well, okay. I would say it's inadvisable.
Okay.
Because what is dickish behavior? I don't think you can bring that word up without raising the question of comparing behaviors to the behaviors of penises, which I just can't imagine how that's relevant. Right. Your behavior is similar to every once in a while becoming rigid and ejecting urine and semen. What does that have to do with anything?
Okay, now you're... Okay, never mind.
What? Did I go somewhere I wasn't supposed to?
Yes, deliberately ignoring.
Respectfully and facetiously... Oh, thank goodness. Facetiously. Good. Mel from Los Angeles, who could be male or female, I don't care. All right.
He does.
Do you want to do more news? Or that's the point. We don't know.
I brought a few emails today.
You did?
That might be worth running through quickly.
Let's check the
time. Our last 15 minutes.
Okay.
A couple of weeks ago, we've been talking regularly about the so-called men's rights movement.
Oh, good grief.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to get too deeply into it, but you specifically asked people to give a more useful and concise way of explaining this thing you said.
Should I repeat the thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
I said, or are you
if
going
you know
to,
what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, repeat it.
In trying to explain why we have a immediate negative reaction to the existence of a men's rights movement which focuses on improving the rights of men, when we're in fact in a situation where statistically women suffer more than men. I came up with this analogy of why that's actually bad, okay? Let's say women suffer a amount of discrimination equal to 2, and women suffer an amount of discrimination equal to 1.5.
Men.
Second one was men, 1.5. Improving that score for men widens the disparity between between the discrimination suffered by men and women. And I think that's relevant, and I think that makes matters worse, not better. That was the point I made.
This is from a listener named Tim, who also hosts his own podcast called the Secular Nation Podcast. He says, I was thinking that this might be better expressed as a superhero analogy. To me, it's like if Superman went around insisting that he was evenly matched with, if not inferior to, someone like Catwoman or the Invisible Girl, simply because she is, for all intents and purposes, immune from kryptonite. And then demanding that there either be a cure for his kryptonite allergy or that the same weakness should be imposed on Catwoman before addressing her inability to go back in time or destroy entire planets with her fists.
Right. Okay. That's not too bad, but it's not really any shorter than what I said.
That's true. Right.
And it does get into superhero territory, which I'm very...
us geeks are all very of us, familiar, yes.
But not everybody was going to get that quite as well. Sure, I suppose. I wasn't going to bring this up, but I've been engaged in an email exchange with a listener who insists that that the whole idea of the disparity between men and women is not relevant, because as long as men are not making things objectively worse for women, that they're not hurting women at all. And my point, though, is that we're in a world where you can see it has been established very clearly and objectively that women suffer more. So if you're going to organize to help somebody deal with the disparity, shouldn't you start with the people that are suffering more than you? If there are a lot of people out there, like half the population, suffering more than you.
Seems reasonable.
This guy doesn't seem to get that, right? It's a very infuriatingly libertarian view of things, right? That as long as you're not actively harming someone, then grabbing everything you can for yourself is perfectly justified. Well, it's fucking not. Okay? In our last exchange, I spun this analogy for him, right? Imagine a world where men have rights and women don't, right? But in that world, women are treated slightly more gently by the legal system than men are. And now in that world, some men get together and decide that they're going to insist that men are treated as gently as women are in the court system also. Now, by this listener's standard, those men are doing nothing wrong. Well, you know, they might not be doing that kind of thing wrong, but what they're getting wrong is they're in a world where they're surrounded by half the population being completely enslaved and having no rights whatsoever, and they're not lifting a finger to help those people who are clearly in much more desperate need than themselves. That's what's wrong with them, right? Those men are monsters. Their inability to recognize where work really needs to be done to help people, right, is that is what's wrong. And I want to I want to touch on one other point. Maybe he's still listening to us. I don't know how much I've insulted him in the email exchange, a bit, because I get angry. But he seemed to be – what he has been saying is kind of a twisted corporations are people argument. And I want to discuss this with you guys because I'm not sure – it's certainly not the exact same argument, right? But you understand the thing. Mm-hmm. Republicans tried to spin this and certain other – pricks tried to spin this recently where, oh, corporations are people. Poor corporations should be given the same rights as people. Recently,
it's not recent. It's been around for
it's been in the news right. recently. Yeah. And the most recent thing is Hobby Lobby. Is it Hobby Lobby?
Yeah.
Doesn't want to have to handle insurance policies for their employees that provide family planning services because they're Christians and they think that's bad, and they think their corporation deserves the same rights as individual people, right? Mm-hmm. Religious mm-hmm. rights for their corporation. And not in my house, you won't. Not an individual. If you go to an individual's house and he says, look, I don't cotton to Judaism, and so you're doing your Jewish ceremonial thing there. Look, I don't want that in my house. You might think he's a prick, but you'd recognize he has that right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, people want that right for corporations. Well, this guy in this email exchange brought up the issue that that individuals are different from groups, right? Mm-hmm. And proceeded to twist that around to try to get me to say that, well, would you be against an individual guy who had been the subject of prejudice fighting against that? No, I wouldn't, because that's not the same as forming an organization to fight for more rights for the privileged.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's an individual guy dealing with that. You know what else is not an organization formed to fight for the rights of the privileged? An organization that fights for rights in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
If your issue is in the courts, an organization that focuses on human rights in the courts, fine. No objection to that. It's only when it's the privileged forming organizations to try to improve their own status that I think it's sick. Yeah. And but this guy in his – and I didn't bring his letter because I wasn't going to talk about it, but here I am.
Sorry.
He's trying to spin the argument, well, you wouldn't be against it if it was an individual. So how can you be against it when it's an organization? Organizations are different from individuals, dude, in the same sense that it's bullshit to try to claim religious rights for Hobby Lobby so they don't have to handle – family planning insurance, right? It's not the exact same argument. I'm not saying it's wrong in the exact same way, but there is a clear difference there, and you cannot make the argument that just because it's okay for individuals, it's automatically okay for groups of individuals. Groups of individuals have a different dynamic and do different things and represent different things in this case.
I mean, in principle, you can sue a corporation for firing you if they are dumb enough to explicitly say, well, we fired this guy because he was Jewish.
Not if they win this court case. You won't. If they make this court case that you have to – the government has to represent – excuse me – has to
respect
the rights of the corporation to have its religious opinions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then they've circumvented that.
Right.
Yeah, which is insane.
At this moment, there is a hold on the implementation of that portion of Obamacare mm-hmm. on those groups because of an appeal. Mm-hmm. And let's hope that gets handled sanely.
Right.
Okay. What do we got left? Five minutes or so?
One last thing. Somebody sent this to me on Facebook. I don't really know that it's that worth talking about, but I just thought I'd toss it out there as a talking point that will probably take 5 minutes or less. I'd like your take on why Hollywood is focusing on turning Bible stories into motion pictures. First Noah, now Exodus, with Christian Bale playing Moses and being directed by Ridley Scott.
Wow.
Is Hollywood running out of ideas? Lol.
Yes.
This is not a new thing.
No.
I wish that they would go to more interesting myths to make movies about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? It's been a while since we had a good Iliad or Odyssey movie. everything that I've heard about the Noah movie really seems like they're treating it as mythology and as like, you know, a fantasy adventure movie.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. I have always thought the greatest contribution that religion ever made to our culture was entertainment value, like vampires. Vampires right. are freaking cool, yeah, sure. right? Vampires make great fantasy fiction. And they don't work, or they didn't use to. I guess now it's been sort of cut away from now. Yeah, it's not so much about crosses and holy water anymore in most treatments, modern
but treatments. But that is still the origin story.
That's still the origin, and it was awesome, right?
Yeah.
I'm fine with it as long. I'm fine with all forms of entertainment as long as people remember that that's what they are.
Val Kilmer voiced Moses already in what was it?
Oh, that cartoon.
Was it that cartoon?
Prince of Egypt?
I thought that was fine, personally.
No, Prince of Egypt whitewashed the whole thing about Moses murdering that one Egyptian guy.
Well, I'm not going to be surprised if this also does that.
But then again, the Disney's Hunchback whitewashed 90% of what was going on in that story.
Yeah, but we got a long tradition of religious movies. We got Passion of the Christ, and then in the 60s, Ten Commandments, Cecil B. DeMille stuff.
I'm much more comfortable with overtly fantasy versions.
Yeah.
Of these, of Christian myths.
Yeah.
Than I am with supposedly accurate, but really spinning it in a way that happens to help out the popularity of Christianity.
Well, it's also movies. Like, I like the idea that somebody who watches Noah
may make an unconscious...
They may have just seen the Percy Jackson movies.
Yeah. Or,
right?
You know, may make an unconscious comparison to Star Wars.
Yeah.
And realize, they can both be fiction.
By the way, it's pretty. Speaking of the Percy Jackson movies, which are some, it's essentially Harry Potter with Greek mythology.
Yeah.
Did you see the second one?
No.
No, not yet.
We quite liked it.
Okay, cool.
Okay,
check it out.
I haven't seen the first one actually.
Oh,
but my son is a big fan, and I know other big fans. So.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasy. Nothing wrong with fantasy as long as you remember that's what it is.
Right. Also, let me just say, I am not scared of religious movies coming out and making a lot of money. Mel Gibson made The Passion of the Christ, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
And it was a huge hit, made a lot of money. 10 years on, we were reading this story about how rapidly atheism has grown in just the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I am not worried that popular entertainment is going to bring about a religious revival.
Yeah. Remember, folks, what happened when the Catholic Church stopped doing all of its ceremonies in Latin and switched to English where people could understand it?
Mm-hmm.
That when people actually hear and get a chance to think about this crap, they tend to stop believing it. Takes a while. All right. Well, that's our show. We'll be back on the 15th.
Yeah.
For our second show of this month. And Happy New Year, everyone.
Yay.
Well, That was our show. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with another episode in 2 weeks on January the 15th. Until then, avoid all dogma.